Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 18th, 2015. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And Scott has a very important meeting after this, so we're going to talk really fast during the show like this, trying to make the show go really fast. What do you think about that, Scott? Should we do that today?
Wow, that's like the FedEx guy, right? Or no, or something else.
Remember the Micro Machines guy, the FedEx, he did all those things, that really fast guy.
Pretty
that
awesome.
Was awesome.
How many takes he had to do that in?
I don't know, he was pretty good at it. He was pretty good. But you're on the road and you got a meeting today, so you got some stuff to do tomorrow too, so we're taping really early today. And that's going to come up pretty important later on in the show, so pay attention.
All right, so catching up on some other news that we haven't had a chance to talk about. While sympathetic to arguments about the skill involved in poker, a Wisconsin judge last month ruled the game to still be illegal in the state, outside, of course, the tribal casinos. Poker pro Mark Croon, who owns a bar where no rigged tournaments were held before they were shut down, led that case and says he was surprised at the ruling and says it will send poker back into the back rooms. What say we, Chris?
In that state, sure. He's probably right. I mean, if it's illegal to play, we're all still going to play unless they play in the casino. And if they can't get to the casino or they don't like the way the casinos run their poker rooms, yeah, they're going to have to do something. And I have to say I agree with them. I mean, I don't know if it has the connotation of what we think of when we think of backroom poker, like in the old days when you had guys out front with machine guns and stuff. But, yeah, I think I have to agree with them there. I think... to say that playing a card game that presidents played and it involves skill is still illegal, it's just silly.
It's silly.
Why all the silliness?
Well, I think this is an interesting story because, you know, on one side, Mark Croon was disappointed because he thought this was going to be a case that really was going to had it went in his favor, which he expected it to be. It was going to be kind of one of those reverberating kind of cases where it was going to, you know, set some case law for other states and really kind of get at this issue. And that's probably the bigger topic we should be talking about here, I guess, is that lost opportunity or whether that really would have worked out had it went that route. I guess I take a little bit of issue to the back room, you know, doom and gloom part of it. You know, there's not a lot of states where it's legal to play poker in bars right now.
Right.
You know, it just so happens that most of the other states have a lot more casino options than Wisconsin. I mean, obviously plenty of casinos up there, really not too far and too hard to get to. So I don't really think it's that people don't have options or can't get to them. I think really what he's arguing is, you know, hey, we want it to be legal everywhere. Now, that's a different story, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's some other stuff in play there too. I mean, you know, one of the reasons that I like playing in a casino environment is I have a fairly good, expectation that the game is being run fairly, that there's cameras, there's a gaming commission that oversees them and that I could go to if I have issues, right?
Yeah.
So just to open up poker to random bar owners to deal, I don't know how that really improves on the home game or going to some barn somewhere where somebody's holding a game. Doesn't seem like that's all that much different to me.
No, I agree. But a lot of states do have like a max, like what was it, $10 or something? The pot can't be bigger than $10 and then they won't give them any
Right, but we're talking regulated bar.
Right, right.
There, right? And there wasn't any mention of that in what I read. Now, obviously, I only read a couple articles. I didn't read the actual case and all that. So I don't know whether that's what they were hoping for, is let's put this poker under the purview of a gaming commission or somebody that's going to look into it. And if that's the case, that's a different story. My assumption, though, is that's not what it's talking about. It's just, hey, trust us to run a fair game in our bar and let people have fun playing this skillful game. And that's a little weaker argument, I think.
No, I agree, because there's no regulation. There's still people can't feel safe if there's no security, if there's no third-party disinterested party or whatever coming in and regulating it and saying, hey, this isn't right for the, someone's got to look out for the little guy. And in that situation, really, you're saying the bar owner is the guy looking out for him, but that's probably not enough to make the government happy or whatever.
I mean, the flip side of that, I guess, is the argument that we've always been pushing is, how can you go enter a fishing tournament or a tennis tournament or a roller soapbox derby, right, for money? And why you can't enter a poker tournament, and I don't think there's any really regulations on those things, really. So, I mean, I guess there's arguments a lot of different ways, but I would say just because of the nature of poker, and I think we have to be honest about this, the nature of poker, the amount of money involved in poker, the reputation poker unfortunately has that we're trying really hard to get away from now, that it's really kind of a game that I personally prefer to have some sort of regulation or something like that on it. So if that's what they're pushing there, then yeah, I think it's unfortunate this thing go that route. If they're just looking to, not hire a karaoke guy to come in to boost business some night and just play poker, I'm a little less sympathetic to that argument.
I agree. Yeah, and I agree with you too about the back room connotation of it too. It just makes it sound seedy presenting it that way. I don't think that's the way he should have framed it either. But I just think that even if he wanted to be case law, it makes no difference. Just because there's precedence doesn't mean that automatically wins the argument in the courtroom. I mean, each judge is still allowed to rule the way they feel, and if you're more than welcome to appeal things. So even if he wanted it to be this grandiose sort of stand that would have set an example for the rest of the country, it doesn't make a difference. There are a lot of, if that were just the case, then every state would be regulated with poker because other states have passed it. That's not enough to make a big deal or a big splash,
right,
that he maybe was
hoping
for.
It's a baby step there, right? I can admit that if a judge said that, hey, poker is a skill-based game in Wisconsin, that's better than a judge saying, hey, yeah, I think there's skill here, but it's still illegal.
Right.
I mean, this could have been worse. He could have said, hey, you're crazy. This is completely a game of chance, and that's not what he said. So.
Right. There was other...
somewhere else or not. It'd be nice for a positive ruling.
Was it down south? There were other places too that have had rulings in the past about, if it's skill or not. And I think it was North Carolina where they had that ruling a little while ago. And there are a lot of places that I think they had even Andy Duke that time testifying about it. And I think we've done enough to prove that it's skill. It's just that people don't pay attention to it if they're not interested in it. So then when it comes up in front of them, they have to start all over again, and they don't. And that's why precedents are out there.
There's a bigger difference when a judge rules it, because then it's in case law. Now all of a sudden when another judge is looking into it, then they're now looking to Annie Duke to tell them whether poker is skill-based or not. They're looking to see whether another judge has went through this process and said, yeah, it's skill-based based on here.
Right.
The more they do that, the more it helps their case.
Well, we'll see how this goes. I know we reported on in our magazine too that he was so disappointed, and I don't know. Maybe so. Is this something that you think he can appeal and try to continue to push?
I would think so. Probably. I mean, there's always appeals, So it's just a matter. It was an expensive case to try. I mean, he did a good job of raising some money from poker players in Wisconsin to put together the defense. So obviously now you're not the defense, I guess, but the case.
Right.
And so now you're talking an appeal that's more money. So now it's going back and passing the hat around. So that could be a problem. But we'll see. I don't know.
We'll see.
So the next one I thought was pretty darn funny, but I think it's got a good story for our listeners. And one of our news hounds, Tom Turley, sent this to me before I found anywhere else. I thought it was kind of funny. Italian poker player. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the Italian. Why am I not read this?
It's Gaetano Prieti.
That's one name.
Gaetano Prieti.
All right. Gaetano Prieti.
That was pretty good, actually.
All right, okay. That dude, whoever he is, thought he was just being funny when he hit a stack of his friend's chips in a recent tournament. Turns out the casino didn't see the humor in it. Who knew? And he was removed from the tournament, and the final table continued on with just eight players. And I guess I kind of undersold this. This was a pretty big tournament, by the way, over in Europe.
I got to tell you, things are starting to get a little more clear for me now. Do you remember the World Series I played in and my chips disappeared?
Yeah.
Do you remember I befriended those Italian players when we were playing at the IP till like 4 in the morning, and then I saw them over at the Rio, and they kissed me on the cheeks? Remember that?
Maybe somebody was just pranking you.
Maybe somebody was pranking me and took my chips. It was the same day. It was the same week that I met those Italian guys. They kissed me on the cheeks. They lured me in. They got my trust. And then my stack disappears when I go to dinner.
Do you remember their names? Was it Gaetano Prieti?
I think it might have been Gaetano Prieti.
Oh, okay. All right. Well. So a little bit more into this. What happened was the guy just thought he was being funny. So his buddy won a huge pot, knocked a guy out. Getting ready to go to the final table now, and while he's stacking his chips, Gaetano just takes a stack of them and kind of moves them off to the side, and then goes over to, I guess, snap some pictures with folks, the other thing I hate about poker these days,
yeah.
And chat with some friends, and they turned around and realized that his friend's chips were already backed up, getting ready to move to the final table, and he's like, oh boy, now I'm in trouble. And then went over and pleaded his case to the tournament folks, and then so they're like, what? Sorry, you're out. Now, his argument was, hey, I know it's just a joke. I think people should know that I'm a jokey kind of player, and I should have a different standard than other people. And that gives me – that burns my toast.
Burns. You're going to say it gives you the red ass, and then you're going
to
say it on
work
the show.
Back to, I'm trying to keep Fasso alive on the show. I mean, there shouldn't be different standards for a player just because they are. That's like Danny Negreanu saying, I'm allowed to tabletop because I'm Danny Negreanu, and people know that I'm just doing it for whatever I'm doing it, right?
Or I pay a ton of money to play in this tournament, so it should give me different rules for my tournament. Wait, didn't we talk about that already?
Yeah, I think we did, right? Yeah.
yeah, no, you don't get special treatment just because of the personality you are. That's just ridiculous.
But obviously, I think I know there's probably a lot of our listeners out there like, come on, dude, this guy was just playing around. He shouldn't have got knocked out of the tournament. And I'm not one of those dudes, all right? I think this is a good reminder to players out there that when you enter a tournament in a casino environment, and this goes back to the first thing we talked about, this is why I like casino environments. Sometimes it's a little heavy-handed, but you need that to protect us, right?
Yeah.
When you enter a tournament in a casino environment, keep your jokes in the bathroom or, later that night, you're not joking at the table by manipulating chips. That's a pretty big deal.
Indeed. Absolutely.
I mean, would you pick up your friend's cards and look at them and show everybody, I'm like, this is the trash he plays and muck them in the tournament? No, you would never think I'm doing that, right? So what makes you think you can just grab somebody's chips and move them around and hide them behind a stack or, put your napkin over them or whatever the heck you did, right? Who does that?
Yeah, I know.
And who should be able to do that? No one.
No. Yeah, it's
kind of... You can still have fun at the poker table without doing these ridiculous things.
It's like, nobody touched the chips but you and the dealer kind of thing. Your chips don't get touched by you or the dealer. You know what I mean? It's the same premise, except, I know you're fooling around, but how do we know you're fooling around? Just because you tell us you're fooling around? And how do we know you weren't planning to steal those chips or use them or just whatever? It doesn't matter what the situation is here. You just don't touch someone else's chips. You want to be funny? Tell a joke.
Exactly, right?
Right? You don't do stuff like that. Not in that environment. That's totally different. It'd be one thing if you're in the home game with your buds and you're cracking on each other or something and then you turn around like, what happened to my... But even then, you got to wonder about the person who did that. If they were so sly to be able to grab my chips without me noticing them, and then later on say, I was just joking. Look, yeah, but what if I never caught on? How do I know you weren't going to take those chips, whether you're my friend or not? There's too much left to chance there as far as impropriety, whether or not somebody's fooling around or maybe they really are trying to, steal, and this is how his way around it, Is like, no, I was just joking or whatever.
Well, here's the other thing, too. I mean, he walked away from the table. He wasn't paying attention, right?
Yeah.
He's over there glad-handing with his fans and getting photos taken, so he's not even watching the chips. So you know, in this case, he turned around and saw that they bagged him up. But, I mean, I'm sure this isn't the first time he's played this prank, right?
Right.
It wasn't like he woke up and, like, you know, went to pokerpranks.com and said, hey, I'm going to try this new one, you know. So what's to say that in the past that something happened to those chips and he wasn't aware of it because he wasn't paying attention, right?
Yep.
Not, it wasn't bagging. Maybe somebody else grabbed them or they, whatever. They couldn't find them and they ended up in his stack. You know, there's all kinds of things that can happen. You know, if you're going to play that prank, and you shouldn't, I think it's like a 5-second prank, right?
Yeah.
You take it and like, oh, hey, you know what? These sack of chips, you pay attention. Oh, right? And you're done. I get up and leave the table and you know, say hi to the paparazzi and then come back and go, oops, I'm special. Don't knock me out of the tournament.
Oh, man. Do you think – so you know that punishment was enough? I mean, it was too, it wasn't
too
much?
Yeah, you can't be manipulating. I mean, what other option did they give the guy?
Yeah.
I mean, the tournament director.
Yeah, yeah.
You got somebody touching the chips. So here's the thing. If they let him stay in and then somebody – obviously, he made a big deal about this, right? As he tried to explain it so that I'm sure other people heard. What happens to you as a tournament director when 12 people in the tournament or around the tournament say, hey, I just got knocked out, and this guy is touching, moving chips around, and he's allowed to stay in?
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the problem. That's why it has to be that way.
Yeah.
So yeah. Just don't do that stuff.
Yeah. It's hard to have a tournament be on board and on the level. Above board, I mean, on the level. If you're saying, oh, this guy moved chips and was fooling around with them earlier. How do we know it didn't happen earlier? How do we
know
he didn't get away with it?
Oh, yeah,
you
know him.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. He's cool.
Yeah. Sorry, folks.
All right, these are some important Annie updates here. If you're listening to this episode immediately and you live in the Los Angeles area, check out the Get Lucky for Lupus Celebrity Charity Poker Tournament tonight. That's September 16th. Don't forget, we're recording early. So September 16th, we're an Annie Up Poker Cruise balcony package for two for our January 24th sailing from Los Angeles is among the prizes. Get the information on that event as well as giveaways elsewhere and information on all of our Annie Up Poker Cruises at AnnieUpCruises.com. And Scott informed me today that the well is getting close to dry on all three of our listener segments. The Listener Spotlight, Call the Floor, and Hand of the Week. So if you've been holding on to some submissions, don't be shy. Email them to podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-424-6145 and win some great new prizes. You know, we love that sort of this give and take on the show, and you know, you guys make the show everything that it is, so send that stuff in. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls the hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. Annie Up listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/AntiUp. Comes from Chris Walsh. He says, in a recent casual pub tournament, a double knockout occurs in level one. One player rebuys while the other player states he is going to wait until the rebuy period ends to rebuy. Everyone gets up in arms because if he waits to rebuy, we have to break down to one table. And then if no one else busts out, we will have to go back to two tables when this player does rebuy. The tournament director says the player must rebuy at that moment, but he also says if new players show up, they will still be allowed to register until the end of level 4. Hopefully you can explain this to me. To my understanding, this is the difference between a rebuy and a re-entry tournament. What should the ruling have been?
Yeah, this could have gone a Call the Floor listener spotlight, but I kind of kept it here because it's a casual pub tournament here, and really what he's getting at here is the difference between rebuy and re-entry, which I think is correct, right? So I think at the verbiage he was using at the beginning of this when he talked about rebuy, I think what he really meant to say is re-entry.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know for sure. I mean, this tournament could be a rebuy tournament where, you know, you rebuy right away, you get in, and if you don't rebuy, then you're out, and then you can still re-enter. I mean, because sometimes rebuy tournaments also are re-entry tournaments as well, too, so that's where it gets really confusing. But in general, a rebuy tournament, you are buying in immediately, you're staying in your same seat, and generally you're not paying additional rake.
Right.
A re-entry tournament means you're a brand new player. That's the easiest way to think about it. You're just a brand new player. You're in, you played, you got knocked out, you go back to the podium, and you say, I want to get back in. You pay the same buy-in and rake as you did the first time, and they usually assign you to a different table and different seat, just as if you were a new person walking in, right?
Yep. That's
Yeah, so I kind of, a little bit more explanation to Chris in this, I thought, too. You know, by the way, he said that, you know, the registration is open to the level four. Obviously, this tournament director erred in making this player rebuy or re-enter immediately, I think, right?
Right.
You can't say, hey, other people can re-enter into the level four, but you have to re-enter right now. Just because we don't want to, you know, collapse the tables. That's a terrible ruling, I think. And then the other thing, too, is you really shouldn't be collapsing the tables if you still have got three levels to go to re-enter. You know, so you play a little short. You know, you got, you know, 5 and 5 now instead of 5 and 6 like you did before. And then, you know, I guess eventually if you knock a couple more people out and it gets ridiculous, then you have to combine. But I think you're going to make one of two things here. Either you combine it right away and let that player that got knocked out and doesn't want to re-enter right now say, hey, I got to knock down to one table now. If you want to re-enter later, you're going to be an alternate. Right?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is a lot of these places
will set rules. You don't go back two tables. So right. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at.
Right. They set rules, and they also set rules for registration. So some of them say if you're going to re-enter, you have to stand behind the people who are waiting to get in now or whatever, if it was a waitingless alternate. But you have to explicitly say this is a rebuy tournament or a re-entry tournament, or it's both. If it's both, which is really confusing, it's very rare that that happens.
Right, right.
But if it's both, if you're going to re-enter later, you're going to have to pay the actual rake. And why would you want to wait to pay rake when you can get right back in?
Exactly, right.
So that's why it's a bar tournament, a pub tournament. So I don't think that it's that sophisticated. I think they probably don't even have rake when they do these. They, you know what I mean? Some of them do, some of them don't. But if you have a rake, then it's illegal if you're not in certain states. So this could be, you know, this could be, you know, who knows where this is. So I don't know where it is. But yeah, it's definitely the casualness. And this gets back to like the Croon item, really, of regulation and how things are run. You know, I mean, this could start a huge fight or argument by the way this guy's doing this, you know, by the way this tournament's being run. Because it's not clear, at least not from Chris's email or whatever.
Right.
It's not clear if what this guy's doing is not legal, but allowed within the rules of this pub tournament. Yeah, it's and so this kind of ambiguity is what hurts the movement of trying to get poker regulated, or trying to get it accepted everywhere. And you know what I mean? This is the kind of thing that you have to look at and say, all right, we have to clearly state this is a re-entry tournament. You get knocked out, you have to come back and pay everything. And we're going to place you at a different table, different seat, or whatever. Or it's clearly a rebuy tournament. If you get knocked out, you have to make a decision right there, you know, before the next hand is dealt. You can't just take your time and then sit at the table for 20 minutes and decide, is enough chips at this table, I'm going to buy in, or whatever. And just these things have to be posted or clear. And that's the problem with pub tournaments and not real casino tournaments. Those things are thought out. And like you said, this could have been a call to floor. And why? Because Elliot would have had the proper education on this and experience with it, and this stuff would have been set in stone where he was, and he would have had the answer, boom, like that. This is what you do. And that clearly wasn't there at the pub tournament. So you need to have regulation or at least some sort of rules that they can look to and say, look, you have to buy in right now.
We should acknowledge that this mistake could happen in a regulated casino environment because there's not always skillful tournament directors there too.
Right.
I think the case we're making is it's far less likely to happen there because
right.
you have more training. And so this is, you know, another argument that if you're going to have pub tournaments, that you have proper regulation for it so you don't have these situations. I mean, I did cut out of the email. He said that the player vote was 50-50 on this. So,
oh, jeez.
You know, it made it even more tougher on this a tournament director that obviously was a little over his head.
Yeah, when somebody rebuys – you get knocked out, you rebuy right there. I mean, that's just the way it goes. You can't get away from the table. The minute you walk from the table, it's over. Your rebuy opportunity is gone. So it must have been a combo tournament, rebuy and re-entry, I guess.
Well, obviously, if they were letting people register through level four, it's a re-entry tournament regardless.
Yeah.
Now, whether it's also a rebuy tournament is a question we don't have. But so, I mean, back when you said it's kind of rare, I guess it's really not that rare to have both because, you know, even on our cruise tournament, you know, our $20 rebuy, it's still a re-entry because it's a late entry, right?
Right, late entry.
Unless you specify, hey, you know, one entry per person.
Right, it's a freeze-out, then it's not automatically a re-entry because you can have a freeze-out tournament where people – now can register really, to a level 4.
Right? Now you're telling people you can rebuy immediately, but you can't re-enter.
You can't re-enter.
Entering late, yeah. It's really confusing.
All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Snow Qualmy, casino director of poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from JD. We're in a bar poker league tournament. Hey, it's just like it's like a theme today.
I need a drink.
And it uses TDA rules. During the deal, a card flutters but does not expose itself. A player says he saw the card and that it was a red jack. The receiving player, who was not the first or second player dealt to, asks if he can keep the card. What's the right ruling? And assuming the card is dealt with like an exposed card, what's to prevent other players from pretending they saw the card and calling out big cards so that the player has to give it up or if they do receive one? How is the identification of the card enforced?
Elliot says, I'm going to assume that this is a this bar league is self-dealt by all the players. In these self-dealt games, if every card that fluttered on the way to a player were taken out of play, there'd be more missed deals than played hands during any particular blind level. True.
Yeah.
Generally, when a card flutters more than it is flashed, it takes unanimity by multiple players as to the identity of the card to take it out of play. This helps to prevent the angle shooting you described. Participants that continually deal fluttered or flash cards should probably be asked to stand up while they deal so that they get a better delivery angle.
I got short arms. it's interesting. I mean, I can see what he says, because also the player who thinks he saw the card is trying to be on the level, which like we talked about last week, where, you know, you're trying to say, hey, I've got additional information that I shouldn't have, so I'm sharing it with everybody. I saw the card. You know, let's deal him another one. But then it could be angle shooters saying, that guy's got a king. I don't want him to have a king, you know, or, and I saw it, it's a king. And then if he's wrong and the guy says it's not a king, and they deal him another card.
Point, because that's what JD brings up too. And I guess I'm having trouble with this, and it could be me. Why would you say it's a king if you don't know it to be a king? Because if that card comes out of play, it's a king is not coming out of play unless it happens to be a king, right?
Right.
I guess I don't get the point about calling out big cards like aces or king.
Well, I guess he's saying you're going up against it, they take it out of play. You're going up against that guy's king right now.
I guess you don't know it's a king, I guess is what I'm saying. He's saying it's an angle shoot. I mean, what's to keep somebody from calling out, hey, he's got a king, and removing the card, right? That doesn't it's not a magic trick. It doesn't make that card automatically a king, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's going with the odds. He thinks he saw paint, and he's got a queen in his hand. He's trying to get that king out.
It's not like they're going to expose the card. I mean, I guess they can expose the card, and then they do. Then it's a two. You know, that. What have you accomplished now? You've just made that guy's hand stronger, right?
Well, I mean, no. I mean, you got to think that he saw it. He got to think he saw something that reminded him of a king, and he's like, well, I'm going to have a queen. If I say he's got a king, and he does have a king, it's throw it away. Right. Now I'm not going up against that king anymore.
That's a slightly different story. Now you're thinking, like, ah, it's all paint, so I'm going to just guess that it's a king.
It's got a 1-in-3 shot if it's, you know, it's either a king, queen, or a jack.
All right. I guess that kind of makes sense. But it's hard to do that with an ace.
It is. It is hard to do it with an ace or, you know, any card, really. It is. It's difficult. And it is funny. But there, you know what, though? I mean, how many times have you seen, like, Vegas exposed on Travel Channel? And you see all these things that these guys are capable of doing.
Right.
How do I know? Maybe this guy's got some fantastic, you know, Superman vision that he can see that, hey, that really was the king of clubs, or I have no idea, but it makes a good point. I mean,
then he knows it's the king, so I mean,
right, but
in a bar league, you might not do this, but in a casino, the dealer is going to take the card and turn it over, and it's become the burn card, right?
Yeah,
so everybody's going to know what it is at that point. So I guess that's what stops people is, yeah, unless he's got the superpower that you're talking about. Eventually, after he calls out three kings and they're an 8, a 7, and a 6, eventually people are going to say, dude, I think you don't really have the kind of vision that you think you do. Appreciate you trying to be on the level here, but obviously you're not very good at calling these fluttered cards out. So how about we just leave them play?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But, you know, it's a good – I mean, he does make a good point, though, in that, you know, what if the guy wants to keep the card? You know, can he keep the card?
Okay, that's a good thing why you brought that up. Why would I want to keep that card?
It was not a king.
All right, well, and this is a situation that says a red jack. So I got to think really the only reason I want to keep that card, I guess maybe there's some other reasons, but well, no, I mean, there's no reason I want to keep that card that doesn't make my hand face up almost, right?
No, you're right.
Somebody says, hey, that's a jack. I'm like, no, I want to keep that jack. So what does that mean? And that means that the other card you have is a jack? Okay, great. Now you're pocket jack. Or maybe an ace or a 10, a queen, you know, whatever it is. I mean, it's not like you're not saying, I want that red jack if I've got a 7 in my hand, right?
Right. Could be jack.
Unless it's the first card, then I guess you're taking the chances. Hey, I want a jack now, and maybe I'll get a better card next. I guess that's maybe, I guess, but geez.
Well, what if it's not?
I don't want anybody to know what I have. So even if it's an ace, I would rather them take the ace and nobody knows I have an ace. Even if that means that my hand now is 7 deuce.
Right.
Then I'll hold it.
Right.
Right? I don't get why anybody would want to keep it either. So.
Well, you're also assuming that it was a red jack. The guy said he saw that and it was a red jack, but the player didn't say it is a red jack. He said, I want to keep this card. Just because he said it was a red jack doesn't mean it is. And if it is or it isn't, I'm not going to tell you. And now I can still have some sort of, you know, he might be able to use that angle too.
That's fair. That's fair.
You know, but, if somebody says, I got a red jack and I have a red jack, I'm likely giving back that red jack because everyone at the table is going to think I have a red jack, and then I hit the jack, and they're going to know I have a jack, and it's just so. Yeah, I can't imagine keeping it unless he's wrong, or I can envision some way where I'd want to keep it. But you know,
even if you're wrong, right? Even if he's wrong, and you play it out, and you win this hand, and you have to table your hand and win the pot. All right, people are going to giggle because you just pulled one over on him, right?
Yeah.
But there's going to be some other people that got to go, come on, dude. That's Bush League, right?
Well, because you had the red jack?
We all thought it was a jack. You said you wanted to keep it. We all let you keep it, and it turns out it's not a jack.
Well, yeah. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to turn over the card that's not a red jack? That I wouldn't do. I looked down at my card and I'm like, dude, it's not a red jack. You're wrong. So I'm keeping my card.
Okay. All right, I see what you're saying.
There's no way I would turn over the card and go, look, it's a 7. Good. I don't have to keep the 7 because right. This guy's an idiot.
I guess it's the same argument, though, in a different way, though. So now you turn over your hand at the end and you have pocket jacks, and you go, I mean, there's just no scenario where I'm going to let a player keep a card that somebody says it's exposed. So I guess the question is here is how do you keep, you know, Johnny X-ray vision there from slowing down the tournament by throwing every card away?
Yeah, if this guy calls out the card and it's not the card he calls out, I'm keeping it. I'm going to say, no, dude, it's not. I've seen that happen a lot, actually. Guy's like, I think I saw your card. And he's like, well, what do you think you saw? I think I saw 3 clubs. Well, you're wrong. Okay, good. Keep going. And they keep dealing.
I guess normally how it is only one player calls it out, then no one else is going to say anything, right? It's
right.
Like 5 other people say, yeah, I saw 2.
Yeah.
What it is, but it's black or it's red or it's pink.
Yeah. And we've done that in the home game plenty of times where it's 2 of us say, yeah, I saw the flutter or whatever. And then it's usually when you deal because you're a horrible dealer.
I am a horrible dealer, absolutely. I should stand up so I get a better delivery angle.
That's right. Even though you're like a homunculus, so even standing up isn't really going to help you.
But where I deal worse is at Frank's house because he's got that like you know Egyptian Nile River fan above it that you know blowing my skin backwards. So even when I stand up, you know, I'm just throwing it right into the wind instead of under the wind.
Hey, we have a new O'Malley's move. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're still in that $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em Casino Cash game. The table dynamic has not changed much, other than the fact that we have been fighting for table captain status with another very solid player. Currently, we sit with 425. The blinds post, and this solid player makes it $10 to go from under the gun. A little below the table standard, but he's been making the $10 raise frequently tonight. He sits with about 350. It's folded to us in the MP, and once again we have queens, spades, and hearts. This under-the-gun raise from this solid player screams strength, but we've got some of that too. We're going to play back at him. We make it $25 to go. It's folded back around to the under-the-gun, who seems to genuinely think for a time before making it $60 to go. Even though we've been tangling with this guy for the proverbial table captain title, there has been an air of mutual respect between us, and he seems like a pretty good guy. I doubt he's trying to make a move here, but maybe this is something like ace-king. I don't want to play for stacks right here, especially since we are worried this might be kings or aces. Even with that worry in our minds, I still want to see what he does on the flop. we make the call. With about 120 in the pot, it comes down the 10 of clubs, 7 of spades, tray of hearts. Our opponent does some more genuine thinking before making a $100 bet into the pot. What's the move?
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Long-time listener, first-time contributor, David Bloomberg.
First-time contributor. Yeah, first time this week.
First time this week. But thankfully, David Bloomberg's out there, so we have a show still.
Yeah.
All right, he's in a 1-2 game. I guess that means no limit. He doesn't specify, but that seems right.
Yeah.
Lots of loose, aggressive players. He says, I'm not one of them. Lots of money flying around. The two villains in his hand both have swings of over 1,000 up, down, and up again in the course of the game. Wow, this is a big 1-2 game.
Oh, man.
It says a setup. I have about 750 right now on a $200 buy-in. I had been at this chip count a couple hours earlier and bled off a bunch, then jumped back up a few minutes ago when I flopped set over set against a guy who will be villain one in this hand. He was saved a few hundred more because the board went runner-runner to have four to a straight, which kept us both from betting the river. Villain put one puts out a $4 straddle under the gun, and there's one caller before me, and we look down at two red tens in the hijack position.
All in. We got a $4 straddle. Let's punish him severely. All in.
Well, I mean, I laugh, but I mean, this is obviously a pretty wild game, right?
Yeah.
People are having $1,000 swings in a 1-2 game, and we've been up and down and now up almost four times our buy-in. This is a loose, crazy game, right? So,
$20.
This is not your standard min raise or raise to 12 kind of situation, right?
$20.
I think 20's good, right?
Yeah, 20 straddler. You got crazy game, loose, aggressive, lots of money on the table. $20 is ready to go.
All right, he says the raises in this game have usually been 7 to 13, even in a straddled pot. That's kind of weird. But have been increasing with the additional money on the table. And he says, as an FYI, villain one is a straddle defender. All right, so does any of that change your mind?
No, I mean, he may call the raise, but he's not. If he's the kind of guy that would raise no matter what, I might check to him. You know, I might just call the four and let him make it 20, and then I'll make it 80 and laugh. But I don't know if he does that. If he does that, yeah, I might not
that's
raise.
That's different than a straddle defender. That's a
yeah,
straddle.
Straddle defender is somebody who will call anything. So, yeah, I'll still make it 20.
All right. I will, too. And so will Dave.
Oh, wow.
Decided to make it $20. He says, since I know villain one will defend a straddle almost no matter what, I don't want to bloat the pot too much pre-flop, but I want to make it clear that I have something here. Villain 2 calls in the cutoff, and Villain 1 does indeed defend his straddle.
Jeez.
He's going to give us a little bit more information about the villains before we go to the flop. He says, Villain 1 is a very loose aggressive, especially when he's been drinking, and he has been drinking. He also is not a mathematical player. That is, he doesn't count the outs and figure out what is the correct mathematical play. He currently has about the same stack as me, probably more. Villain 2 is also loose and just plain plays weird. You never know what he has because sometimes he doesn't know what he has.
Yes.
He also currently has me covered. All right, so we're kind of in trouble here in chip stacks at least. The flop is 10 of spades, 9 of spades, tray of diamonds. Villain 1 leads out for $30. And what do we do with our flop set?
Wow. Top set, but we've got to protect this hand. I mean, first of all, Villain 1 bets out, and we know this is like a defender, so he could be betting anything.
He's aggressive drunk, too.
Yeah, and he's drunk. So we got top set, but it's vulnerable right now because that type of hands that would call the raise that we made perfectly fit in with the suited aces, queen jack, you know, even jack eight for all we know. So this is the kind of hand that even though we have top set, it's not like it's safe. And $30 bet into us? You're going to bet into me? Into us? We're the one that raised your stupid straddle. So there's already 60 out there, and then he bets 30, so there's 90 out there. You know, I'm like sliding 100 out right now and saying, you want to draw or you want to try to take this from me? Go ahead. Because I'm not. What I'm trying to say is I'm not afraid of this board, and I've got an overpair, but what I'm actually gotten is a lot more. So.
Right.
But if these guys are loose and they don't even know what they have half time and they're drunk and $1,000 swings, yeah, I'm prepared to go to the mat with this right now and
absolutely
end it. So $100 maybe.
Yeah, I know our listeners know this is the kind of game that I usually get out of because I just don't have the stomach to play in this type of game. But if I find myself in this game, this is exactly the scenario that I'm hoping will happen, right?
Yep.
I make a raise pre-flop. I get two loose crazy guys in there. Flop top set. I know obviously it's vulnerable, but there's absolutely no defense for slow playing here. I think it's bet big and then hope that that guy, villain two, doesn't believe you and raises, and then villain one goes crazy and you all get it in. I'm quite happy getting it all in here if it comes to it and trying to fade these straight and flush outs.
Yeah, there's no way that I'm not going to be overly aggressive now and just try to end it. For me, in a 1-2 game, I realize there's a lot of money out there and we're up a bunch, but in a 1-2 game, making 60, 90 bucks on a hand right there, I'm happy with that and move on. It's only 10s, as Dale Negrano loved to say to us. So
yep.
It's only 10s. Let's get out of this hand now.
All right, our hero makes it 65. He says, this is less than I normally would raise because I believe he is probably betting a draw, as I've seen him do quite a bit before. And if he has a flush draw here, it'll almost be impossible for me to get him off of it. So by raising to 65, I'll be able to push out villain two while not overly bloating the pot in case a spade or straight card comes from the turn. I got to say, way too cautious here for this game.
Yeah, that's not enough. And you know the thing, too, is I realize we get criticized a lot for trying to force hands out as often as we do. You know, I know a lot of people, I remember Rant used to get on us a lot about this. We haven't heard from him in a long time either. But he would always say to us, hey, you want those guys in the pot drawing, and you just want to make it a mistake for them to draw. Right. And that's fine, but when you have two opponents and these huge swings and these guys are playing crazy cards, I'm happy to win this pot right here. I don't think keeping one in because he's drawing and getting the other one out because he's probably not, it isn't the right way to go here. I wouldn't mind just taking it down and moving on to the next hand, you know, and getting an opportunity where you're going
to
make.
Nor would I mind raising to 100, as we said, and having both callers come around.
Right, because then that's a huge mistake on their part. Right, you're making exactly a ton of money. Then if they miss on the turn, then you put the hammer down because now you've got enough out there to justify shoving. And you know you have the nuts. If it misses on the turn, you have the nuts right now. So I have no problem doing that.
Based on the description of these villains, I'm not trying to get anybody out of this pot. You know, they very well are drawing. I'm just going to price them to the point that they're making a mistake. But I want them both to stay in here.
Right. And if they get out, I'm not going to be upset. Like I said, I'm not upset.
But I'm not trying to lose in with a min raise, which is essentially what we just did.
Yeah, that's kind of small. Because that's
even
keep
funny thing is he min raised with a hope of pushing out villain two.
Yeah.
I don't get that logic, to be honest. If you're trying to push them out, then you're more likely us and bet 100 and find out they just get out, right?
Right.
I don't think 65 is going to be drawing, pushing anybody out of this pot with a draw.
Well, I don't know if the second guy, the second guy might not have.
He's got to worry about the first guy repopping, right?
So yeah.
Possibly. But no difference between 65 and 100 in that scenario.
Right.
All right. So anyhow, villain two calls. Whoops, our hero says. And obviously so does villain one. So kind of what we thought. We just didn't get as much money in that pot as we would have hoped for.
Right.
Turn is the deuce of diamonds. So our board now is 10 of spades, 9 of spades, tray of diamonds, deuce of diamonds. Doesn't change anything, but put another flush draw out there and odds are other straight draws. And now villain one slows down and checks to us.
Yeah, okay, so we made it 65 earlier, so that's 195, or 100, was it 195 right there? So
plus the
original 60, so you got like almost a $300 pot here now, and I started with 750, and I've put out, so I've got about 670 left. I mean, I'm going to make like almost a pot-sized bet here. I can't imagine.
Yep.
You know, now there's two. There's all kinds of draws now, because now you got diamonds, spades, wheel draws, straight draws, higher than that. I mean, I got to put the hammer down. So, because like you said, these guys are random, and if they're drawing, well, now you've given them four draws.
Yeah,
that you have to wonder about.
Made one mistake by letting them in, and not punishing them. And so now I think now if they're, I mean, this is kind of a weird thing. Had we bet the 100 that we were talking about, right? And they both call, then I'm definitely betting pot because now I hope either one I take it down or two, that's a terrible mistake on their part, and they've shown a propensity to call bad bets, right?
Yeah.
We don't really know that because the 65 really wasn't a bad call, I don't think, for either one of these if they have what we kind of think they have. But still, at this point now, it's time to like, all right, you know, our his goal was to get one of these guys out last pot, and he min-raised, and that didn't work. So now, obviously, you can't just, you know, bet a third of the pot here. You got to...
Yeah, you got to put the hammer down. So if let's say you have 650 left, and you bet... If the pot is about 250-ish, so if you bet 200 or 250, you're betting about a 30-year stack. A little more than that, actually. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know about shoving, because there might be some guy who's just crazy enough to call.
More than the pot, though. Yeah, I'm not shoving, but, I mean, 300 is more than the pot right now.
Yeah, I think 250.
Yeah, I'm almost going to turn it into, hey, I'm bluffing here, and I'm betting so much that you guys aren't going to call. It's almost inducing them to call, which is, again, a bad play if they have what we think they have. And if they have anything else, I mean, we've still got the nuts right now, right?
Yeah, we have the nuts. I mean, that card is, while it's, it gives other draws, it's a perfect card because we know we still have the nuts. It's very rare that you can still have the nuts after the turn.
Because this is a great situation to overbet the pot.
Yeah.
We know we're ahead right now, or at least we have the best hand right now, I should say. And if we bet way more than makes sense for them to call, then we win either way. I mean, we may not win the pot. They might still get there. But that's what you want in this game. You got to play that way in this game.
Yeah. What do you say, 250, 300? I'd say 250 probably. Say,
yeah, I might go 300 here. I mean, the pot's like around 250-ish, right? A little bit more. I might go 300. But 250 is fine.
250, yeah, I think 250 would be enough for these guys to not for a draw.
No less than 200.
Yeah. Yeah, no less than 200. I don't think that these guys would call on a draw with one card to come more than a quarter. If they had, even if they had $1,000, you know what I mean? They're not going to call 25% of their stack on a draw on one card when they've only committed 65, 85.
You got to play the situation, right?
So. Yeah, I don't think they would. I think 250 is probably the right bet here.
Okay. We bet 125 pretty quickly. This is about half pot and is also a fairly big number, which in live games I've noticed often matters more than percentages. I think it's way too low.
Yeah, it's not enough for. We got two guys coming along. Someone's going to call that.
I mean, if somebody has some kind of weird diamond combination with a 10 or 9 or something, now they've got a flush draw to pick up with that. Now 125 with, you know, two pair or something like that, or, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of things they could have that they backed into now, and now you've priced them in.
Yeah, somebody has queen jack of diamonds right now.
Yeah, there you go. That's a bit more likely situation.
125 is not going to scare anyone. So that's just not big enough.
Of course, if they have queen jack diamonds, they're probably a favorite here, right?
Well, not with one card to come, they're not. Because you have a set. If you had a pair of tens, they might be a favorite. But a set, that queen and the jack outs don't mean anything. So it would just be the straights and the flushes. That's not enough. With one card to come, it's not enough to make them a favorite, I don't think.
Yeah, but a king or eight's going to give them the pot.
No, I know. I don't think it's enough cards to give them the favorite, though. With one to come, with two to come, they're
four
a favorite.
Four kings, four eights, and nine diamonds minus your boat outs, right? So
yeah,
that's a pretty good draw.
Well, a ten of diamonds, a nine of diamonds comes out of it. So now you've got seven cards, and then you've got the four, the two, the four, and the four is eight. So you've only got 15 outs once. That's one third.
15 ounces is pretty nice, though.
Yeah, but it's not.
$125 bucks into a 250 pot.
Yeah.
Plus the possibility that the other guy might come along as well.
Oh, the bet isn't big enough, but I'm saying he's not a favorite. There's no way he's a favorite to make his hand.
Okay. He's not a favorite, but the bet.
But the bet's not enough.
Bet's enough. Yeah. I mean, for him to stick around.
Yeah, it's enough for him to stick around because he's got a third of the deck, essentially, that's left. A little more than a third of the deck, and the pots. It's not even a third of the pot, so he's got the right odds to call that now.
Right. So to double back to what we were saying, had we bet 250 or 300 here and they called with that hand, they'd be making a mistake.
Yeah.
Now, they might still get there and beat us, but they'd be making a mistake. And if they don't get there, now we've just got another 125 or 100 more out of them, right?
Yes.
And we are right now.
Yes. Yes, it's just not the right bet for this situation right now.
All right. Let's see. Villain two folds, actually. But villain one thinks and then calls. Our hero says, I'm still putting him on either a spade draw or a straight draw. And the river brings the king of diamonds. That's a pretty cruddy card.
That's like the worst card ever.
But the villain checks, so I think that makes our decision pretty easy. Right?
Yes, we are not betting. I mean, it completes the straight and it completes the flush, a backdoor flush. And if he checks...
King of Spades would actually be the worst card, but this is the second worst card.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible.
All right, so here it says, I can't see how he gets there with diamonds, but I've seen stranger things happen before. I bet. What could he have that he call with? A smaller set again, two pair. I decided even though I may be giving up value, the risk to the rest of my stack isn't worth it, so I check.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, because you're only going to get called by a hand that's made, and he could have a baby-made hand, but he's going to call you, and if he has a huge hand, he's going to check-raise you. So you're not going to get anything out of this guy with a weaker hand than a set there. He's not going to call. So
Right. And the most likely hand from the beginning he had was Queen Jack. So,
yeah,
you know, whether he has it or not, that's the most likely hand, and that hand has his beat now.
Yep. And if he has Queen Jack and it's spades or some other combination, because it doesn't have to be suited, yep. Now he could be afraid of the diamonds, and that could be why he checked too. So you saved you some money to being a diamond if that's the case.
I think it's more likely that he's checking to induce a bet to us. It's a bad move, but, you know, a loose, aggressive, drunk player doesn't really have the moves down, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be happy to check behind here and see what happens.
all right, our opponent turns over the 7 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds.
Brutal.
The opposite side, yep.
Brutal.
But again, it's exactly what we thought, right? Straight draw from the beginning. Didn't get there a straight draw, but obviously had diamonds that allowed him to stick around.
Back-to-back diamonds, jeez.
Then he had 1,000 outs on the turn, and we didn't bet enough to make him fold. Or make him make a mistake, I mean.
Think he folds? I make a mistake if you bet 250? Think he folds?
I think it would be tough for a player described like that to get away from 250. So, you know, but again, that's a result-oriented, right? Our desire was to get him to make a mistake, not to push him out of the pot and win the pot there. And had he called in, again, I'm not great on the math, but 250, I think, would be a mistake, right?
Yeah, it still would be a mistake. I mean, it'd be close, but it's still
300
not the right
would call. Be a terrible mistake.
Right.
But I also think a player like that's not going to fold for 300 there. He's going to look at that hand and he's like, man, I got the World's Fair here, right?
Yeah. The world's
fair. If it hits, then, you know, I mean, obviously implied odds are hard to figure out there, but there are some, so.
Man. So how did he react to that?
He says, of course, that is how he got there. Nice river, dealer. Ugh. Dave was surprised he didn't lead out on the river, but he may have thought I'd continue betting. Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he couldn't put us on diamonds, so I mean, he had to think that he had the winning hand there. So I think that was a mistake. But, you know, this is the weird thing. When you get there, now you bet, and then usually the reaction is, I can't believe you got there. And then it all matters on how much you bet, right?
Yeah.
On whether they want to call just to see it. Favorite words you ever see when you actually get there, right? Because somebody has been betting. Or not. And, you know, sometimes I think it is worth. I mean, we showed strength all the way, so not unrealistic to think that we might take a stab at the river and then get more value out of it that way.
Yeah, you know, the only way I can see this as a good play to check there for the villain is if he was selling it like he was going for spades the whole time and no one could have ever put him on diamonds. But because the king gets there and offers the straight now,
right. Exactly.
Now yeah, so I think you still have to make some sort of bet there. But maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's so obvious that the straight got that he's thinking, there's no way this guy's going to call my bet. So maybe if I check and he tries to steal it, then I can, I don't know. But I think he needs to get value for his hand there and he lost value.
But we also have the reputation of not being the crazy guy at the table, right? So it's now you got to think about whether even in his impaired state, he is cognizant of that, right?
Right.
If he is, then I think he's got to think that we put together that a king is a brutal card for us.
Yeah.
Even though that card isn't the card that, you know, it's not the hand that he has, but his hand still has his beat. So it's more likely that if we check here and we show a weakness again that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's you can't get away from. I just don't know if this guy would have folded at any point. I think early on when we made it 20 and he calls, that's pretty obvious. You couldn't do anything differently there.
No, I don't think we're winning this hand anyway. We've done it, but we certainly priced him in all the way. So we ended up saving money the way that David played this hand.
Yeah.
But in the long term, I think we made mistakes that are going to cost us money.
Do you think he calls 100 when we re-raise him from the 30?
Oh, pre-flop?
Yeah, and if the other guy doesn't call, when we make it 100, the other guy doesn't call.
Well, again, he's described as loose, aggressive, and drinking, so maybe he's going to take a flyer. I mean, that would be a terrible call, but...
And then we put the hammer down on the turn.
Yeah, that's true, because the pot's going to get bigger at that point.
Yeah.
All right, so our hero says, what could I have done differently? I'm not sure there's much. After the hand, he said the only way he might have given up a flush straight draw on the turn would have been if I went all in, which would have been almost $500. And that was still just a maybe. All right. It kind of tells you who we're up against.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm glad I didn't overly bloat the pot early and that he didn't bet the river because I really don't think he was folding for any reasonable amount at any point in this hand. So, you know, unfortunately, that's a results-oriented reaction. You are correct. You lost the least amount of money I think you could have lost in this hand.
Yeah.
But there was a lot you could have done differently.
Yeah, because after that $20 bet raise in pre-flop, after that, we were trying to get him to bet more every street. So by the fact that he bet less than what we wanted to, he absolutely lost a minimum.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's just no way around. We would have bet more, and we would have lost a lot more. Although, like I said, we did entertain shoving on that turn. So maybe we do shove and get him out. I don't know if the guy's going to risk $1,000 on one street.
But. Yeah, but even shoving is a bad move for us, right? You know, it would be, again, if we're thinking about the hand, I mean, it might get him out. He said he maybe.
Right.
We win the hand, but that's... You know, that's not the value we're looking for. We're looking to keep a guy for bad odds. So those have been terrible odds, but I don't think we had any expectation that someone would stay in with the shove.
Yeah,
the shove is shutting it down and winning the pot, moving on.
Yeah, and you know, we talked earlier that we obviously get raked over the coals sometimes for trying to force people out, and you know, in this case, we force somebody out. We would have won a pot instead of lost a bunch. So, I mean, it just depends. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And, yeah, you want to get value for the hands. But when that turn comes up with all of those extra draws, and it turns out to be the draw that actually got there for him and beat us on the river. So, you know, maybe it's not a bad thing to just shut it down. You had the nuts at that point. So shoving is not a mistake if, you know, if you're not going to get value. If you just want to win what you have, it's not a mistake. You have the nuts.
That's true. That's true.
So, Dave, thanks for saving our bacon. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.